Howdy, writers and listeners. August is basically over. September is here. And this is the very last time I can invite you to join us in Bar Harbor, Maine for the Find Your Book, Find Your Mojo retreat from September 12th through 15th of 2019. It's a fantastic chance to get some one-on-one time for your project with me or author accelerator founder Jenny Nash, and then dig in with all your might in a gorgeous setting surrounded by your fellow hashtag amwriting word nerds, including Serena Bowen, who's going to talk about indie versus traditional publishing. There will be bonding, there will be writing, there will be kvetching and knitting and artistic renderings of words of the year and all kinds of festivities, and I, for one, can't wait. Find all the details at authoraccelerator.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause, and
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay.
I'm KJ Dell'Antonio.
And I'm Jess Leahy.
And this is Hashtag AmWriting.
With Jess and KJ.
Hashtag AmWriting is our weekly podcast about all things writing, be they fiction, nonfiction, some bizarre intertwined creation between the two, just because I was trying to mix it up a little bit. I know. Memoirs, short stories. We really haven't done anything on those. Proposals, essays, long pieces, short pieces, and most of all, the one thing we always are is the podcast about getting the work done.
And I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and a forthcoming book about preventing substance abuse in kids. And you can find my work at the New York Times and the Washington Post and recently at Airmail, which is a new venture by Graydon Carter of Vanity Fair. And that was kind of fun to write for someone new.
I am KJ Dell'Antonio. I am the author of How to Be a Happier Parent and the former lead editor and writer of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, where I am still a contributor. I'm having a freelancing break while I work on what will be my second novel. And my first novel, The Chicken Sisters, will be out next year.
So exciting.
That's who we are. That's why you should listen to us. And today we have a guest that I think you are also going to want to listen to. I want to welcome Karen Locke Culp. She is a child development expert and a parenting coach with a podcast, a thriving online community, and she is the independently published author of 10 Secrets Happy Parents Know. But we are not going to talk about anything parenty because what we are going to talk about is getting all that work done. Because Karen is also a woman who lives with chronic illness. She has a tendon disorder that she'll describe to you later, but it has made her an expert in the use of her voice, both as a podcaster and in dictating her writing, which I know you're all going to want to hear about. And it's also made her an expert at keeping her butt in the chair, sometimes whether she wants to or not, and getting her work done anyway, even when it's really, really hard. And that's why you're here. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's really wonderful to be here. This is very exciting for me. Your podcast is one of my favorites. It is one of the few that survived my recent digital, what do you call it? Not digital purge is the wrong word, but like digital reset. That's the word.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Reset. Reset is nice.
Yeah. I yours was one of the few that I brought back in because it's incredibly valuable.
Thank you. That's awesome. So nice. We survived a purge. That's so exciting.
I purged lately too, although I partly purged just because I got so frustrated with the iTunes podcast app and switched. And then once I switched, I realized I hadn't brought everything with me and some of it I didn't miss.
I had that moment where iTunes said, you seem to have not downloaded this in a while. Do you still want to listen? And I thought about it and I said, well, no, actually, I'm done.
That's cool. That's really cool that
you
did that.
Yeah.
So, Karen, I guess let's start by, so what I really want to talk about today is the specifics of writing with chronic illness, but also more on a general note, just the challenges of writing when it's hard. I think that we all have times when we feel like this is impossible. And you have written through moments that I think most of us would define as actually impossible. So start by telling us where you stand and how this started for you.
Wow. It's quite a story. So actually, first of all, I think I just want to say that I was well into my second book, writing my second book, before I would dare to call myself a writer. So there's that as well. I'm a podcaster. I'm not a writer. You know what I mean?
We all have that. Yeah. I mean, it's always, well, I wrote for the New York Times, but only online, you know?
Exactly. Like it's not a real
kind of a writer. Cause yeah, nobody, none of us thinks we're a real writer yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe Salman Rushdie.
And when I, so
David
when I first,
Sedaris thinks he's a real writer.
He thinks he's a writer. Yeah, exactly. A real writer. I was midway through the second book and I was like, I said to somebody, oh, I'm a writer. And I was like, wait a minute, I actually am a writer. Like, that's pretty cool. But for me, it all started 8 years ago, more than 8 years ago now. I contracted a tendon disorder. And the way that I did it was I got a gastric disease called diverticulitis, which I would not wish on my worst enemy. And I took some, this is the nearest that my doctors and I can figure out. I took a really strong course of antibiotics, two actually really strong courses of antibiotics to get rid of it. And they had a thing in them called fluoroquinolones. And since that started, since I went down this rabbit hole, it's been discovered that fluoroquinolones cause tendon problems, largely in kids, but cause these problems anyway. And the rheumatologist told me probably 4 or 5 years in that, like, I'm one of the lucky few who it stuck around for. There's like a third of people who get this, that they get it and get better right away. And then there's a third who sort of get it and it sticks around for a couple years. And then I'm one of the ones who's, you know, it's gone on for a really long time. So for me,
that's
just
annoying. I mean,
isn't it?
You know, you that's love my odds, one in a million. Right? But the truth is that in a single hand card game, odds don't matter. And if it's either going to stay or it's not, and it stays, just those odds just make you mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I it took me a long time to get here, but I would say that what I've done is I've kind of gone through a real metamorphosis. You know, before I was a caterpillar, and then this was my chrysalis, and now I'm a butterfly. Like I truly understand the meaning of differently abled in a way I never ever did before, because so for the first couple of years, the focus was really on my legs. I lost almost complete use of one leg in particular, my right leg, because of some of the tendons in it. And then there was a sort of very long rehab. But while I was going through that, I needed a wheelchair whenever I left the house. It was a mess. And when that got better, then I started, then my thumb tendons started to go. And I'm still basically really still recovering. The legs are much better than the upper body. So I do all my writing, everything I do online, I do with speech recognition software. But the thing is, I think I want to even go further back than that, if it's okay.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason that I started to do anything is because I wanted, it may sound silly, but I wanted to give a TED talk. I remember watching TED talks and loving them and laughing at them. Like I couldn't move. I was stranded in a chair. And I remember thinking, you know what? I could do a TED talk in a wheelchair. I want to do a TED talk. And so what I haven't done one yet, you know, I'm still hoping to, but this whole thing started because I was like, well, I want to do that. So my husband especially helped me try to figure out, like, how could you do that? You know, because at the same time as I wanted that, I was also feeling incredibly useless and a total burden at home. We had two young kids and I couldn't be the housewife, you know, and I couldn't be the cook and I couldn't be the laundress and I couldn't be the chauffeur. So I really was feeling very, very down, like not quite suicidal, but if you got hit by a bus, it wouldn't be a problem kind of thing. And I had to learn first that there is value in me, even if I can't use my hands or my legs. And once I learned that, once that my family was like, well, no, we need you. We need you to be the brains, which is how we define it around here. Then I could sort of look outwards from that. And that was when I really decided, I think I want to do a TED Talk. And that has led to so much cool stuff. And even if it's not ever a TED Talk, I'm so happy.
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of cool that it started from that, right? And it remains as a goal, but now you have, you know, you have so many other goals that you have achieved in the meantime. By the way, you're real even before you do a TED Talk, just to, you don't have to wait to be a real bunny until you get like my head.
Oh, I appreciate that. Anyway. That's a very good thing to know. I mean, it's nice to have that validation, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So how did, I almost don't even know where to go from that, but so you picked a topic and you took it from there. I mean, you've got, it's sort of hard to list all the things that you have, but you have this thriving online community, you have a coaching business, you have a lot going on now. What came first?
So first came the podcast, and that was that came about in a really interesting way too, because my husband wanted me to have an iPhone. So part of my problem, part of the hands happened because I was doing too much texting on a phone that had those 9 buttons. You know what I mean? Where you'd have to like cycle through the A or the number 1 to get to A and all those sorts of things. And that really blew up the thumb tendons. And my husband was like, okay, we're going to get you an iPhone because it's play school. You won't ever have to worry about like anything. You know, you don't have to choose between apps. Like it's there for you. Like, you know, there's no worries with an iPhone, which my family has since they've gotten Androids, and there are times where they want to throw them out the window. You know what I mean? But I still have an iPhone because I need it. And that was when I really first discovered podcasts. And one of my favorite podcasts was done by an entrepreneur who teaches other people how to start an online business. And I really wanted to start an online business. And I didn't know.
You got to name the podcast, by the way.
Oh, that podcast is
not
called,
right.
It's called the Solopreneur Hour podcast with Michael O'Neill. And I actually love that because Michael owned, so I got into his podcast and I started trying to do something. I made a horrible, horrible website with my husband's help that I will never, you know, I'm so glad it's gone, basically. And because I just needed to start. And I knew I wanted to do something for parents of young children. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I've got a bachelor's in human development and family relations. I've got 9 years as a preschool teacher in an industry standard, state of the art, absolutely wonderful town run preschool program, the town I grew up in, actually. And I wanted to help parents because I couldn't be in the classroom anymore. So maybe I could, you know, I could at least help them that way. And so I'm developing this, as I say, this pretty awful website, and I'm doing it listening to Michael O'Neill's show. And I wrote to him at one point, and I wrote to him basically to say thank you, because what he was doing was making me feel like I could do this, like this was attainable by me. And I explained my tendon condition, and he read my letter on the air, and he gifted me 3 months in his coaching program. And I just want to take a moment to send up a silent thank you to him, because if I had not, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't had him. But I mean, he's just a wonderful guy.
Say a thank you to you, because if you didn't reach out, you know exactly when he would have come and knocked on your door if you hadn't written that letter? Never.
Never. Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, we often are like, yeah, I was really lucky because, but you made your luck.
Yeah, that's very true. And I remember the feeling of like, this is really happening. Like, oh my gosh. And his real jam, the thing he's really good at helping people figure out, is what's your brand? And so we went through, as I said, he took one look at this goofy website that I had been working on, and he was like, oh, you know, this isn't going to fly. And
so not this.
Yes, not this. Exactly. And then we spent, I would say, probably a good part of those first 3 months coming up with the concept and the brand. And I will never forget the day after trying 3 or 4, you know, names, when I said to him, you know what I've been really thinking about and pushing around is the idea of a podcast called We Turned Out Okay. And he was like, that's it. He goes, that's it. And then he goes, you know what your tagline is? It's the modern parent's guide to old school parenting. I was like, yes.
Perfect.
And it was just so much fun. So the whole process was fun. And like, he made it fun, and he made me feel like I could do this, you know, whereas at home I was sort of getting a little bit of like, are you sure? Do you really want to take this on? This is a lot for somebody with, you know, with the conditions and the problems that you've got. And I it was so motivating and such fun to be in that program. So I'm grateful to him. Very, very grateful.
Well, and it's cool that it came about that he offered that to you. But this is also sort of a moment to recognize that getting some coaching can be super helpful. I think a lot of us we're really reluctant to spend money on our dreams. And also we have this feeling that if we were really capable, if we could really do it, we could do it on our own.
Exactly. You know?
If I were a real writer, I wouldn't need an editor's help. I were a real entrepreneur, I wouldn't need a coach to guide me through finding my brand. And that's just not true. We all need to learn where we're going, and getting in with an expert can just, you know, can cut your time in half. It can inspire you. It can help you see exactly what you saw, which was that, it might not look to people on the outside like you were ready to do this, but you wanted to prioritize it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that's cool too.
Yeah. Yep. So that's how I got started. That's a really long story for how I got started.
That's okay. We accept long stories. So at this point, you're podcasting, and then you must at some point have sort of decided, well, I need some blog, I need some writing to go with this podcast. Let us know how you figure out how to do that, especially given that you were going to need to dictate.
So I think one of the things that a lot of people overlook, I guess, is or don't want to hear maybe, is that like you've got to start it before you know what it is. You have to start it before it's fully formed. And I started the podcast in 2000 and I think 14 or 15. It's just over 4 years old. So 290 episodes in 4 years and counting. And I got to maybe like 56 or 57, and I did an episode called Positive Discipline Ninja Tactics, and people went nuts for it. Like, I started to get emails from people. It got downloaded more than any other episode I'd ever done. And people really responded to the idea that, wait a minute, there are these little ninja tactics I can do to make like my home life better. It's super easy, but things that like I know as an early childhood professional that maybe a parent who's not wouldn't know, you know what I mean? So things like how to make no sound like yes was one of those first ninja tactics. And what I did from that was I decided to write a book called Positive Discipline Ninja Tactics. And I wanted to be able to talk about it in written form as well. There's this idea you should have an email list. And again, for me, that's been I've been taking a lot of time to try and figure out what is my email list and what's it going to be. And I've gotten to a point in 2019, I've figured it out and I love it. And people, again, are really responding to it. It's a weekly newsletter now there where I always get to vary it. But then I started it as like, hey, if you want to get notified when Positive Discipline Ninja Tactics is available, then, you know, I'll put you on this email list and then you can find out. And that really grew from there. For me, it's been a lot of sort of experimentation and exploring like, what is my burnout rate? So I used to do six episodes in a month. And I realized after the second year that like that was not working for me. It was too much. I couldn't concentrate on my coaching clients if I was spending that much time on the podcast. Instead, I needed to sort of so I started doing these bi-weekly, which means every other week. I hope that's right. Not semi-weekly, but bi-weekly. Every other weekly live members-only calls for the people in my community. And if I did that twice a month instead of this extra podcast, I wasn't burned out anymore. I was focusing my energies in the right place because the people in the community could then say to me, like, here's my question about this. And I could go, oh, my God, like, people who listen to the podcast need to hear about that too. So I'm serving my clients first and then being able to bring these cool things to the listeners.
Right.
So, yeah, I started listening to Joanna Penn, the Creative Penn podcast, and I started to sort of reframe like not just a podcaster of myself, not just as a podcaster, but as an author as well. And what she does is so cool because she's all about like write books that are really professional and well-written and fantastic, giving good advice and keep writing them. And I was like, you know what? That's something I could do. And so I have been, I've been working on that. So the book that is...
Wait. You're saying that's something I could do, but you don't type.
No, I don't type, exactly.
So that I want to hear how you... Well, first of all, we want to know how you actually do it. But how did you get over that mental block of, you know, I'm going to write, but I'm not with a pen, not with a keyboard and not with a pencil?
Well, I'm especially waiting to hear about this because I have tried. Well, because mainly
we
because
want
I've,
the mental block first and then yeah. we want the tools.
Okay. I just all can't. Right. I've tried so hard. And so I'm dying to hear how you do all the dictation.
Can I just say that it was not without many temper tantrums? I mean, I think this is necessity is the mother of invention. There was no way for me to do this without the speech recognition software. So I had to form a truce with the speech recognition software. And so for me, I've spent over these years now, I've spent, I don't know if I've gotten my 10,000 hours in or not yet, but I would say probably. If you're thinking of, I think it's Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. But the way that I got there was by doing it. So like, I work much better if I can read something that is printed. So like my husband printed out the entire user manual for speech recognition software. So I was learning the commands because there are these interesting commands that you can use. So you can make it, you can tell it to click here. You can tell it to click save. You can bring up a mouse grid. And I think if you guys are looking for the tool that has been a lifesaver for me, it's this idea of a mouse grid. So I want you to envision your computer screen and you say the words mouse grid. And what happens is a grid of 9 blocks comes up on your screen. And so say I want to click something in the lower left corner, that happens to be the number 7. So I would click 7. I would say 7. Yeah, I would say 7, and then the mouse grid would reappear, but the whole mouse grid is now where the number 7 used to be. And so it's made it a little, it's focused now in that corner.
Where do you get something like that?
Where do you get the mouse grid?
Yeah.
Well, I use Dragon speech recognition software, so that it's a component of that. But I'll tell you, I learned how to use that properly by watching the most beautiful and just heartbreaking, but also beautiful video on YouTube. I mean, you think you've got problems, right? And then you Google how to use the Dragon mouse grid. And the person describing it to you is a person who not only has lost the use of his arms and legs, but also has speech difficulties. And they are describing to you how to use this mouse grid, and then they are using the mouse grid. By the time he gets to the grid, to the small enough place in this video, I am crying. I mean, like, and my thought was, if somebody like that can not only do that but teach me how to do it, there's nothing that will stop me. Like, what an incredibly good example of someone who's, you know, who's making it work no matter what, you know.
Wow. All right. Yeah. we're gonna link it.
Yeah, that was, I don't think I have it anymore, but I will try to find it if you can't, so just let me know and I'll see if I can find it. So the mouse grid is a huge tool. Learning, like, I've discovered that Dragon plays very well with Chrome and not very well with Firefox, for example. And it's just this real, so there have been times where I have felt like I was drowning and that I just couldn't get a breath. I wish I had a better description. I will sit down and I'll be like, all right, I'm going to write a blog post. And I use the speech recognition software to open Google Chrome. And then I use it to navigate to the inside of my website, not the outside pages that everybody sees, but the sort of private admin pages. And I get to the correct post. And
I'm sorry, you're doing all that using the Dragon Dictate?
I am, yeah.
Because we think of Dragon Dictate as just something that lets you dictate a story, but you can sort of basically set it up to run your whole...
There are voice commands for all of this, but what I've learned to be more patient with, what used to kill me so bad was I would get 3/4 of the way through that process, and then I would open the dictation box, which is like, sometimes Dragon can't see what, it doesn't know what you're trying to do. I don't know how else to describe it. So it won't write anything. You'll say something and it will say, you know, we can't recognize that speech or something. And you're just like, gah. And so I would get all the way to that point, and then, you know, the app would crash or something like that. And I would talk about temper tantrums. I mean, but I just felt I kept playing the song "It's a Long Way to the Top" by AC/DC. And I kept thinking to myself, there's no other way. Like, it's either this or you go throw yourself in front of a train. Like, what's it going to be here, honey? And I knew I wasn't going to do that, so I was going to have to keep doing this, basically. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, it totally makes sense. So now you're writing a book via dragon dictation and all of the challenges that entails, and then you're editing it the same way.
I am. And I have learned, this was such a breakthrough for me. I have learned that I can say, if I'm going to write the title of a chapter and have Dragon sort of recognize it, I can now make a recording. So I can get my podcast mic out and my headphones and stuff like that. And I can say the following. So here's the title of my book that Dragon will recognize. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Cap Educating, Cap Happy, Cap Kids, colon, numeral 9, Cap Ways to Cap Help, Cap Your, Cap Child, Cap Learn, Cap 2, Cap Enjoy, Cap Learning. Something like that. I can't remember it exactly, but that's the book I'm working on right now. And when
you're fluent in punctuation.
It really is a whole other language.
It's a whole other language. But what's neat is you can get into the flow of it in a recording sense. So like I can record 15 minutes of language that sounds like that. And I can, there's a transcribe button in Dragon, and it will take that and put it on paper, but legibly so that it can be read. It just says Educating Happy Kids, 9 ways to help your child learn what they need to know. And it's like such a mirror. Every time I see this appearing, I'm just like, yay.
I have to hop in and quickly apologize for only naming your most recent book, because I knew that you had more, but in the intro, I, for whatever reason, just threw out the first one. We will be listing them all.
Oh, thank you. No worries. I mean, I appreciated that you listed any of them. I mean, it's and this is the one that I'm currently working on. So this is the one that my brain is like really thinking about.
Gotcha.
Right. I just today, I sent it off to my editor for final revisions. So yay.
It's funny when you said the thing about how, you know, you can if you want to do this thing badly enough, you can figure it out. And when we interviewed, oh my gosh, his name just went out of my head. It'll come back in 1 second. But when we were interviewing Shane recently about the fact that he can't, you know, he uses his two thumbs to type entire books on his iPhone. And oh my gosh, you know, KJ and I used to have a segment in the show called Ow, It Hurts, but it was always like, Ow, It Hurts, like, oh, I don't really want to write this, but not like I have to write an entire book with my two thumbs. I, you know, Shane Burkaw, if he can write, what now, 3 books with his thumbs, I think, you know, I can figure out, you know, the intricacies of how to use dictation software.
If you want to, if it's a real goal of yours, I think a lot of times, like, so I would not be a podcaster or an author without the tendon disorder. Like I was too invested in my own life, I guess. I was, you know, I was, I remember sort of having this yearning. Like I remember being 38 about a decade ago and just saying to my husband, like, you know what, isn't there anything else? I mean, I love you and I love the kids, but isn't there anything else? And I think had I not gotten the tendon disorder, and had all of that other stuff kind of stripped away from me, I'm not sure that I would have had the guts even to try something different. I mean, even now I will walk into a Christmas tree shops and I get tired. So I often need to find a seat. So you'll find me sitting on the bird seat or, you know, I have been in line. This happened just recently. I was in line at Joann Fabrics and the line was so long that I literally sat down on the floor and crossed my legs and apologized to everybody around me and said, this is just what I have to do. I mean, once you've been through things like that, those are really socially embarrassing situations. And it's like, well, I can do anything if I can do this.
I just am fascinated. I I'm fascinated. My brain is stuck on the line that I wouldn't be a writer without my tendon disorder. I think, you know, the very thing that makes that more difficult for you is the thing that made it happen. And I find that really wonderful and fascinating and complicated.
Yeah. Thank you for recognizing it. It's one of those, when I think metamorphosis, that's really what I think of. And I came to our conversation today with a couple of points that I wanted to make sure, like, if anyone is trying to work in difficult circumstances that I thought they might want to, you know, this is what's worked for me. And the first one is to just own it, to say to yourself, this is what I want to do. Like, it's so easy for us to get caught up in like, well, I've got to get dinner on the table and I've got to, you know, we've got all these duties that we have in our day. And there can be some guilt around backing away from work or family and saying, I'm taking this time to do this thing that I really want to do. And for me, that had to come first.
Yeah. I mean, if you are in a situation where you have limited resources, be they physical or mental, to put them into this thing that at that moment is only for you is really hard. You know, it's very easy to say to yourself, well, you know, if I only am going to have like an hour of like sort of on time today because I'm suffering from exhaustion or you know, just because I get physically tired, I should put that into my kid's school meeting or dinner or, you know, something.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's what's worked for me. That was the first thing was to, I remember lying in bed one morning and saying, it was right around, it was just before I wrote to Michael O'Neill, just before I started to like come up with this website. And I remember lying in bed one day, and every day I had been thinking, you got to get busy living or get busy dying, which is from a movie, and I'm blanking. I think it might be from The Shawshank Redemption. And I would lie in bed going, are you going to get up now? Because you got to get busy living or get busy dying. And on this particular day, I sat up in bed and I said out loud, I am doing this. And I'm not even sure that I knew what this was yet, but like it was this idea of I am breaking free of the sort of constraints, whether they are, you know, because I feel guilty that I can't do very much or because like my time really ought to be spent on this other thing. And I was basically like, I got no hands. So like, I'm going to do this, whatever it is.
I was just going to say, okay, fine. If you can get your mental head around it. And it also sounds like you had partner support, which is great, but sometimes
huge.
We have to go on without it.
Yeah. It was huge. So Ben used to say to me, he's actually the producer of my show. And what's funny is he has like a, you know, a day job. He goes off to work every day and it doesn't have anything to do with audio. But he went to school for sound engineering. And he, you know, we like his friends from college are people who work on the Today Show or who have won Grammys and stuff like that. And he basically decided that his life was going to take a different path. But we used to joke. I used to say, like, we'd pass a radio station in the car and I'd be like, hey, let's move here and I'll be the talent and you can be the producer. And like, that's kind of what's happened, which is so interesting. So he gets to feed his audio soul a little bit. He gets to geek out over, you know, making the show sound great and like all the cool, you know, little audio things that he couldn't do before. So support is really important. But I will say this too. Ben is the one who he was like, he used to say, like, we need to get you with your friends because you're so much happier when you're like with people. Like he would say, I've seen you come alive today if we went to a party or something. And because it's just so hard to be sitting alone and you know, only feeling like you can't do stuff. And so I when I said to him, I think I'd like to try starting a business, he was like, yes, please. Like, I'm glad you need something to do with your mind. So he was always very, very supportive from the beginning. And I didn't think to put that on the list, but I think that's probably pretty important.
Well, it's hard to be the partner because you can think to yourself, you know, if I were in that position, I would do such and such. Well, and first of all, you don't know what you would do. But secondly, you can't actually do it. So, you know, you can look at your partner and see, well, she really needs to get out there and do stuff with her friends. But it's not like he can pack you into the car. He has
It's
tough to be them, too. All right. But what comes next?
All right. So next for me was the idea of just starting small, like small habits have won the day for me. Like when I first started, and even sometimes now, I have a version of your open the document. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I always felt like, so if you've got 5% use of your hands, what can you dedicate that 5% to? And sometimes it was twirling spaghetti and that was all I had, you know? But if I've got 15 minutes, if I can take the next 15 minutes and dedicate it to writing something, like, and then I don't do anything else for the rest of the day, that's fine. I put one foot in front of the other today. I took one step. So really small habits that you do repeatedly is the next thing. I think, because you can say to yourself, like, it's too big. I just can't. But if you try to break it down to like the smallest step, the step that you feel like, okay, I can do that, I will do that. And then you're done for the day and you come back to it the next day. And so small habits are fun and good. The next one that comes up for me is celebrate the wins, even the tiny ones. Like you get, you know, you, so I've been writing a fictional book 1 minute at a time. Which I know sounds crazy, but it worked for Neil Gaiman, so I feel like it's going to work for me.
The only way to do it. It's just a question of whether they're consecutive minutes or not.
Yes, exactly. So rather than, I just don't have the time to commit to even 15 minutes a day of fiction writing, but I can open a notebook, and it's hand strengthening practice too, is how I look at it. I can open a notebook and I can write a sentence. And what I've been taken to is I'll write a full sentence and then I'll make the next sentence be like the beginning of the next sentence. So the next day when I come back, I've got a writing prompt basically. And I have found that it's enough to keep this story alive for me. Like, so I had the idea for the novel and I did a lot of work around like, what's the main character dealing with? And I have a dear friend who lives in Maine, and the property next to her dream property has been taken over by a jerky landlord who insists on bringing like people from away who shoot off guns and bring bands in, and they're raising a family. And I'm writing this to give her some hope, basically. And
I hope
I've been working
revenge.
Yes, exactly. So, and I've been having a ball with it 1 minute at a time. So that's one of my 1 minute, like that's one of my tiny habits. I can't do more than that. So that's what I do. And when I do it, I celebrate that win. Like I did this today. Yes.
Yes. All right. Keep going. Do you have more?
I got two more.
Okay.
So I work in, I think of like my most important resource is energy, my energy level. When that's gone, it is gone, and I have to go to sleep for 8 hours to get it back. So I tend to work in projects, and the way I think of it is like quarterly I will look at this each quarter anew. And my project for the first month of the quarter is recording the podcast episodes and getting those show notes done, so that for the whole quarter. So now I've got two other months that I can keep writing, or I can I can do other cool stuff. This August, we're gonna have a staycation, so I get to do that because I planned in July, you know, for August, and then I'll get that project completed and then work on the next project. So for this quarter, it's been educating happy kids has been really that's my next project. That and rest.
That's your next book, right?
Yep, that's my next book. And so I have found that is a really great way to sort of manage my energy level, because I can see progress as I'm working through a bigger project. And for me, that really, really works. It may not work for everyone. Some people might like to sort of get a little bit of something done every day repeatedly, but I like to be able to say, okay, that project is finished and now I can move on to the next one. So I've been doing that. And then the last one, and this is probably the most important one, is the idea of trying again tomorrow. So like if today is a blowout, if you cannot do it, if everything has gone wrong today, you still have the choice to get up and try again tomorrow.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's great. I love it.
We've also observed in the past, this happens with me with writing, and it happens with me with teaching, that some of my very worst teaching and writing days have been followed by some of my best. So that's a good reminder for me that, no matter how crappy things go on one day, it can turn around completely the next.
Yeah. And as a, I think as a part of all of this, there's this idea of support. Like we talked about that a little bit with my husband, right? But you guys are such a support for me. The hashtag AmWriting Facebook group has been, it's one of the only places I go on Facebook. I go there and I go into the group of We Turned Out Okay listeners that I have developed over there.
It is the only place I go.
It's literally
True. KJ and I, what we did was we made it so that the group is our bookmark for Facebook. So if you're going to go on Facebook, you have to go there.
No way.
Yeah. So
how do I do that? Yeah. You could have two bookmarks, one for our group and one for your group. And then you never have to risk being caught up in something that you didn't want to experience.
I'm going to Facebook.
Yep. And I think that's going to be particularly valuable as we head into the next couple of years.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
Yep.
Well, can we talk about what we've been reading?
Yes. And but before we even go there, I have to say the amount of helpful information so far has been, I have been writing stuff down on my end and
excellent.
It's been great. Yeah. So anyway,
I've written down tons, and we're going to come up with some ways for listeners to get at this. I'm vague podding, but more to come, more info to come. Probably like in the afterword or the prologue or something.
One last thing I want to say before we get to the books. Jess, I don't know if you will remember this, but I was referencing before how I use that 1 minute to strengthen my hands. And I got to meet you. This was several years ago now.
Oh, I totally remember.
You totally remember that? Because I brought my book. I brought my book of quotes and I asked you to sign that.
I have a picture of your book of quotes. It was really, really cool. And explain what you mean by book of quotes.
So I started taking like either pictures from magazines or newspapers or you know, images or whatever that I really liked, that really resonated with me, that made me feel positive and happy. And I started putting them into a notebook. And then I also started putting favorite quotes from books, things that I knew I was going to want to revisit. And what's cool about that is now I have like several years worth of those and I can go back and I can be like, oh my God, yeah, I need to remember that. And there were like 5 quotes from The Gift of Failure in there when I brought the book to you. And it was so much fun. Your reaction just made it it's just so exciting.
It's super trippy and amazing. And you inspired me to do the same thing. So now in my notebook, I'm constantly writing. But your notebook was really, really pretty. And I took pictures of it because the way you put together these quotes that move you and inspire you was so beautifully done. So it meant so much to me. And of course, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm really, really glad. That was a blast.
That was really, really fun. So what have you been reading?
Oh, my gosh. I've been reading... the one I'm going to start with is the one I want to most talk about. So if I run out of time, I got to get this one in there. It's called Invisible Women, Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. And it's by Caroline Criado Perez, which the spellings are all going to be right in the show notes, I'm sure. And it is a book about how the world is designed for men and how that can be, it can actually be life-threatening for women. And like, it's so interesting because at first you're like, really? I mean, really? And then you start reading and my mind has been blown. So she talks about just one example is in, I believe it's in Finland. I actually haven't gotten to this yet. My husband recommended this book because he heard about it on a podcast. And there's a chapter about, I believe it's Finland, where snow plowing, like snow street clearing, is threatening women's lives because of the way the streets are cleared, because of the methodology behind what streets are cleared when. And it has to do with the fact that men basically go to work and come home and women do all their errands. So they're slipping and sliding all over the side roads. Absolutely fascinating. And I like just the foreword of this book, I kept having to stop and be like, oh my God, can you believe this? Like, and I'm raising 2 teenage sons. And so what's really fun about this is just engaging with them on this stuff. And they're like, whoa, like I never thought of it that way, you know, or whatever. It's been really, really cool. So Invisible Women, please, please read it. It's great.
That sounds really interesting. And I hadn't heard of it.
Visible Women or Invisible Women?
Invisible Women. And the cover is... the little symbol for male going, you know, the bathroom symbol for males in black, really, really clear and vivid. And then in sort of like this silvery whitish color, the same color as the cover itself is like, is the female symbol. So you can't even see them if you're looking at it in the wrong light. Absolutely.
Looks like a good cover.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm sneaking them in. I also am reading the Purloined Paperweight by P.G. Wodehouse, which I've always loved P.G. Wodehouse. That's my bedtime reading. I need something really light before bed, and P.G. Wodehouse just fulfills that. So that's so good.
Did you know that someone, and I actually have it. Right.
No, she's such a, KJ is such a huge fan. You totally went straight to her heart.
Somebody has written a... like a mod, it's not a mod. Oh, a modern author has written a Wodehouse, and I liked
you shouted about it a few weeks ago, and I was like, "Oh, I need that book," and I read it. It's called Jeeves and the King of Clubs. Jeeves and the King of Clubs. Yep, that was such a good book.
I thought it was good. All right.
Yep, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. Okay, last one. Grown Up Anger, which is a book by Daniel Wolfe, an author I've had on my show for another book that he wrote. This is a book that takes Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie, and a massacre that happened in 1913 in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and connects them in this really interesting musical line, which just blew my mind. So I had to talk about that one. It's just so good.
That sounds like it might be up Jess's alley.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. KJ, what have you been reading?
I just read a really fun summer read. It was called The Bookish Life of Nina Hill by Abby Waxman, she might turn up around here at some point.
She might turn up.
She might indeed. Anyway, I had such a good time with it. I am a sucker, as many of us are, for any book with the word book, library, bookstore, etc. in the title. I think authors have recognized that a little too hard, so you have to be careful about picking those books. Always download the sample if you're reading them on digitally. Otherwise, you know, pick them up and touch them. Anyway, The Bookish Life of Nina Hill was really, really funny. Book story, Silicon Valley-y, oddly enough, California-y, all the sort of juicy bits of things that you don't know about like trivia contests and lives you'll never lead. And I had a great time with it. Lots of fun.
Cool. That sounds like a good one.
Man, our selections are really diverse this week. I'm reading one of our former guests' book. It's finally out. Liz Lentz's book, Godland. It is fantastic. It's part memoir. It's part reflection on faith. It's not much of it is memoir, but it's really about faith in Middle America. Her subtitle is A Story of Faith, Loss, and Renewal in Middle America. And gorgeous cover. It was shorter than I expected, and she's done a really great job with the pacing. I'm really impressed with the book. So yay, congratulations, Liz. You did a beautiful job. And if you recall...
Mine is on the way, so I'm...
If you recall... She had two books due in the same year. So this is one of two books that she wrote in the same, both research-based books. So anyway, woo-hoo. Props to Liz. Good job, Liz. So, we ran super long, but this is like such a jam-packed episode with lots of helpful bits to it. So I am thrilled. And thank you so, so much for being with us. And if people would like to find you, where could they find you?
They can go to weturnedoutok.com and you can spell it either OK or OKAY.
Excellent.
You're so smart.
I also completely forgot about our bookstore shout out. Do you have one?
Yes. Oh, I was going to give a super quickie bookstore shout out to the bookstore that is owned by Jeff Kinney, the author of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yes.
20 minutes away from me. It's called An Unlikely Story, and it's in Plainville, Massachusetts. And it is such a blast. It's like such a fun place where there's so much more than books, and the books are awesome too.
I know of a couple of people who have read or done events there and have just loved it. So I'm going to have to do a pilgrimage there at some point.
Yes, please do. Let me know when you do, because I'll try to meet you there.
Oh, absolutely. All right, I think we're good. This has been a fantastic episode. So until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. This episode of Hashtag Am Writing with Jess and KJ was produced by Andrew Perella. Our music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and performed by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their services because everyone, even creatives, should be paid for their work.
Save. Pause.